Blog Talk Radio.
Let your hands for Angela.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the interview is with Reverend Lionel Gant. He's from the state of Georgia. He has Stop the Violence and Incarceration. He has that foundation event. He also is a pastor. He's a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Today, we also have Mr. Harry Saffo Jr. Mr. Saffo has wrote books. He's an artist. He's going to share his story with you later on about going to prison and being sexually abused as a child. First, we're going to start with Reverend Lionel Gant. How are you, Reverend Gant?
I'm fine. How are you doing, my sister?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing great. Good to have you on Show Talk with Angela, especially Mr. Harry Saffo Jr. So, Mr. Gant.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about how before we started recording, we were talking about how we're at warfare, how we're at war, how America's at war with black people. I would like you to talk about it in your own words, sir.
Well, it goes back deeper than that. It goes back to the war that's being fought to maintain economic dominance in the world, and we have found ourselves in the midst of the struggle because us being black, with everything that happened during the civil rights struggle, us fighting for equal education, us fighting for against discrimination of the separate but equal laws, us fighting against, the laws that we couldn't ride in the front of the bus. We had to enter into the back of shops. There was a black side of Atlanta. There was a white side of Atlanta. And it seemed like right now, everything that we fought for during the civil rights era, the Voting Rights Act, the Social Security Act, everything that we fought for, to gain our rights, it seems like all of those things are under attack right now under this present administration, and so it seems like we've made all of this progress in the last 50 years just to go backwards. So right now we're fighting for our human rights, we're fighting for our voting rights, we're fighting for our equal housing. As you know, they tore down all of the projects and forced us out of the projects. Now everybody has Section 8 vouchers where they're living in houses that they can't afford, and the problems are getting worse and worse. And so it seems like we're going backwards instead of forward. So a lot of our fight is in those areas. We had the problem with fighting for the women's rights. Now we have the LGBT community that has come out, and they are fighting for their rights, which they were given their rights. We have another problem with the GMO foods that are being produced. All of these foods that they're producing now are designed to wipe us out. Everything that they're doing today is designed to wipe us out. Okay, when I talk about the LGBT community, I have nothing against them, in any kind of way. What they choose to do behind their closed door, that's their business. Okay, but what it's doing to us as a population, with our gay and lesbian population, you know, it's affecting our ability to reproduce. Okay, what is happening with the mass incarceration, that our young men are being massively incarcerated, what happens? You can't have children while you're in jail. It affects our ability to reproduce. What's happening with them dropping off the guns in our community, drugs in our community? We're out here literally killing ourselves. So everything that is against us right now, we are literally at war in America. And we are the target, and Black America is the target of that war. And we were talking about the vaccines that are rendering our women sterile because of the melanin in our skin. We were talking about the birth control pills that are being stemmed with some type of HIV virus. Where we were talking about Georgia being fifth in the nation for new HIV cases, and that is affecting our girls ages 13 to 27. And we've linked that back to the birth control pill because that's around the age that most of the mothers would get their children started on birth control, and now all of a sudden these girls are coming up with HIV positive. Okay, so that's what we're saying, that we are at war in America. And even the water now that we're drinking in Georgia is laced with fluoride. Fluoride is rat poison. Okay? I mean, fluoride is inside of our toothpaste, and you can brush your teeth with the fluoride, but you spit the fluoride out. You don't ingest it. Okay? But now they are putting fluoride inside of our drinking water. So we're trying to warn the people to stay away from the GMO products because, you know, in the book of Genesis, God commanded that when he created all of the fruits of the earth, when he created the trees, he created the plants, he created the vegetables, each one of them he commanded that they give forth seeds after their own kind. All the food that we're buying today, apples don't have no seeds in them. The oranges, you buy orange, it has no seeds in it. I mean, you buy grapes, they have no seeds in them. They are altering the earth. They are altering the plan of God, and they are literally wiping us out. And then that's what we are trying to attack now. We have 206 acres of land down in Dublin, Georgia, where we're growing healthy organic food, and we're trying to educate our people to grow their own food, and we got to stop eating this food that they're producing for us in these massive warehouses that's literally killing us and causing cancer. I'll turn it back over to you all.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Reverend Gant. Mr. Harry Saffold Jr. is also on Show Talk with Angela Butler. He's going to talk about his life, and he's going to peel back some bandages of reconciliation to show his scars. Scars of sexual abuse while wearing the frown of a lonely boy left to fend for himself in the dark world in which you live. Hello, Mr. Harry Saffold Jr.
How are you doing? Glad to be here.
I'm doing fine. So, I know you had a question for Reverend Gant also about the HIV population in Georgia. I think he kind of answered that for you. He didn't say what kind of chemical they were putting in the birth control, though. He just said, I believe they investigated that, Mr. Gant.
Yes, they're investigating that. there's a particular pill. I will research the name for it. I can't remember it now, but there's a particular pill that they're giving that they have linked. They have linked it directly with HIV.
And so you believe this is for economic dominance, economic control?
Oh, yes. They're wiping us out. Literally wiping us out in broad daylight.
But why? I mean, I know they can't, this is totally off the subject of what we're talking about, but I know they cannot beat black Americans and fairly. They can't beat us fairly.
Well,
in politics,
okay.
In athletics, writing, music, dancing, intellect. They can't beat us fairly. I can tell you that. They have to kill, steal, and lie in order to defeat us any kind of way. Is that why they're doing it? Because I thought black people spend a lot of money in America.
Here's the
money's going to be gone.
The real reason why they're doing it, first of all, we are God's chosen people. Our DNA is stronger than anybody's DNA on the face of the earth. And we have the ability to breed them out, but they cannot breed us out. A Chinese man, white man, Hispanic man sleep with a black woman, it produces black offspring. A white woman, black woman, white woman, black woman, Hispanic woman, Chinese woman, Russian woman sleeps with a black man, guess what? Black child. We have the ability to breed them out, but they don't have the ability to breed us out. Go ahead.
But they're still trying to. And that's doing damage.
Too.
Yes,
no,
sir.
I learned a long time ago that, you know, it's one thing to learn about black history, American history. But when you look at the first four letters of the word student is S-T-U-D. And when you look at the first four letters of the word study is S-T-U-D. At some point in my life, I had a host of questions. And I said, you know, it's one thing to learn about black history, American history, but I had eventually just became like a student of world history. And when I began to look into the Irish people under what was called the clearance, they were like displaced. When I take in consideration the Trail of Tears, how the natives walked from one portion of the country to another portion, and then you look at the Jewish Holocaust. I said all that to say that after reviewing the world from a global standpoint, this whole battle is about control. I remember catching something in the news probably about 6 years ago where it made mention that people in China were jumping out of like 13, 16-story buildings because they were being overworked and underpaid. So what I'm seeing is that it's all about control. Who can convince, who can break down mentally, who can convince, you know, a certain group of people? That's what it all boiled down to. Every group of people on the face of this earth is being oppressed by some entity of some kind. And it's all about control. And speaking to, you know, African Americans in this country, a lot of our actions or inactions is based on fear. I mean, we have to take consideration that, I mean, there was a time in 20s, 30s, 40-something-year-old African American male had to get off the sidewalk should he come in contact with a 12-year-old Caucasian. That's fear. That's fear. And they didn't, you know, when I look at our ancestors, they didn't just pass on woolly hair and big lips and broad noses on to us. And even though they passed on their strength, but there was also fear passed on. And when I look at some of the things that we're faced with today, it's somewhat of a reflection on what our beginning was like. I'm working on this painting now. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, it is about control, sir. For Mr. Sappho, this has been going on a long time for black people. In the first place, we shouldn't be over here. They shouldn't have brought us over here. They shouldn't have had our ancestors build the foundation of this country. They shouldn't have enslaved us. They segregated us. And the one thing that people seem to forget, our people, our ancestors, my relatives, your relatives were not, didn't get over here because they wanted to be over here. That's what everybody seems to forget. We're not, we're here because our ancestors were slaves. They were kidnapped, raped, in a ship like a can of sardines and bought over. That's what everybody keeps forgetting. And all these other races and all these other cultures and countries, we're the only ones who were forced over here.
I don't think that. I definitely get your point. I promise you I do. But it goes back to that word control. Control is not only just intellect. When you have people that can take you from one continent and dump you off in another country, another land, sell you over there, that's power. That's control. And we have to also take in consideration that our beginning didn't start in Jamestown in 1619. Our beginning started in Africa. And in Africa, you had what was called raids. Some of those raids were performed by other African tribes. Black-on-black crime didn't start in North America. Tribes in Africa have been at war with each other. We also took one another prisoners of war. It didn't start here.
But we are not, but they forced us over it. No matter what was going on in Africa, they did not have the right to do that. That's what everybody keeps forgetting. The Africans that were at war with each other weren't asking to come over here into the Western world.
War is war, and the outcome of war is just as detrimental. It has nothing to do with who the perpetrators are. War is war. Yeah, you got mass incarceration here, and I would never make the assumption that African tribes took other Africans, imprisoned them at the same rate or amount. I would never make that assumption. What I'm saying, though, is that one of the reasons why this system has succeeded, because there was also people that looked like you who contributed to that, and that didn't start here. You take, for instance,
we talk a lot. The saying that current-day modern Africans that I have talked to and have been on my show, so that's not true. That's a lie the whites told.
What lie? What was the lie?
That they sold us into slavery. They're saying they didn't do that.
I beg to differ. I read up on some African scholars that beg to differ. Matter of fact, I'll send you a video at the completion of this this broadcast. But the point I'm making is we didn't just end up in this state. There's a beginning. There's an alpha. And I think that we miss it when we try to say that Caucasians are only responsible or the only people responsible for our condition.
They started the slave trade before the Middle East.
Exactly. We were at war with each other. It's always been conflict amongst men, no matter how you look. It's always been that way. And that's one of the issues that we can't seem to address. Even prior to the slave trade, think the Shaka Zulu tribe. People praised them. But what were they? They were warriors. We praised the Mandinka, which is also known as the Mandingo tribe. We praised them for their strength, their warrior tactics. It's always been conflict amongst men. But the overall objective is control. Who's in control? And when I see some of the things that's taking place on American soil, it's not just impacting African-American people. It's Hispanics and it's Caucasian. You both agree to that. Some of them are in worse condition than we are. So I think the overall objective is seeing the
people. Over here. They want forced over
that.
Here, sir.
I get that. But that goes back to the control mechanism. I definitely understand. But when we got here, we continued that behavior, crossing each other out, selling each other out. That's the only point I'm making.
Yes, sir.
We did come.
Yes, sir.
We did willfully come.
Okay.
You know what?
So,
for people, let me say this. For people to say that white folks infiltrate our minds and they're responsible for us killing each other, that's almost like saying they taught us self-preservation. And that's what it all boiled down to. I have never been able to buy that theory that white people are solely. Yeah, I acknowledge there's some things that they've done to us by the masses. But what I'm also saying is that people that look like me, I mean, we see the damage that we do to each other. You've been hurt by people that look like you. So that's not our beginning.
Sir,
we got to. Excuse me?
Yes, sir. I have.
I mean, you.
Mr. Sapphire?
Go ahead, I'm listening. Go ahead, I'm listening.
No, I was just saying, you're right. I have been hurt by other people who don't look like, who look like me. But from my point of view, it was always somebody white that had did something to the black person to pervert them, to make them do that to me. Evil's evil, though. Evil's evil. But I'd like to talk about you, sir. You have a story to tell, a real life story. It's almost like a church testimony. You've been through so much. You went through so much, Mr. Sappho, Mr. Harry Sappho Jr. And you went to prison. You were sexually abused, but yet you're still here. You're still surviving. I mean, the story that you went through is similar to other people's stories, some men, some women that I know. So they're black people. But you, while you were in prison for 12 and a half years of burglary, you managed to get a GED. You tutored fellow inmates. You honed your craft as a writer. You were paroled at 32 in 2008 after being repeatedly denied parole. You eventually became homeless and managed to create your own way through legal means by making the news for positive actions as opposed to criminal survivor. You're very much a survivor, Mr. Sappho. So what I would like to know is, how old were you when the sexual abuse started, sir?
18. Yeah, by a relative and not long after by a neighbor. So it was the age of 10, yeah.
This age of 10.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. The thing I learned from that experience, though, that you never know what the form your predator would come through. I mean, I just look at the R. Kelly situation, surviving R. Kelly, and just looking at that and the rhetoric surrounding that, yeah, it's sad. But I wonder here you have two African-American parents that wanted to see their daughter on stage somewhere. And I have to wonder how many parents also want to see their sons on an NFL football field or basketball court and gave too much trust to a coach somewhere. And you'll probably hear that story another 10, 15, 20 years. But what I learned from that is a predator will come in the form of a minister, a coach, a babysitter. The documentary film I did called Hijacked Childhood, which can be seen in part on YouTube, at least three parts out of four, I was able to convince two other African-American males to share their story, and one guy was sexually abused by a babysitter, and the second guy was actually gang raped by a group of males. And you just never know. And it's something that, dealing with the African-American community is somewhat a taboo subject to even speak on, because at some point what I learned about us is we want to protect the name and image, or we want to protect that close family member or perhaps that neighbor. So a lot of times we either don't believe it or we just suppress it, or the victim themselves, they suppress it. And when they do speak on it, sometimes we don't want to wrap our minds around it. So we have people who have not been able to address a childhood traumatic experience. And through some of the people that I've talked with, men and women, some of them became abusers of drugs. Some were suicidal. Some did what they called self-infliction, like they would cut themselves. And I acted out. I just acted. By the time I turned 12, that I can't be a victim no more. I got to become the opposite. But what sexual abuse also taught me was that pretend that it didn't happen. Be quiet about it. Don't say nothing. And I found myself pretending in life where I said, well, you know what? Even though I'm a joyous prankster type youth, even though I'm lighthearted, I was, sinner's prayer, pray. But just something happened, experiencing that, it was like you can't keep pretending to be so lighthearted. You can't keep being a jokester, a prankster. You gotta stop that or you're going to be victimized again. This is how I'm thinking. And at one point I said, I just got to become the aggressor. I got to pretend to be macho, pretend to be bravado. And what I learned was, when you pretend to be something for so long, you end up becoming that. And then it puts you in the atmosphere amongst those people that you're pretending to be like. And then you have to really be what you've been pretending to be. And that's where the street life came. Been on both sides of the gun. I'm a shooter. And it landed me in prison at the age of 19.
Yes, sir.
And, you know.
So, how are you now? I mean, you were sexually molested three times. I know Mr. Tyler Perry has this story. Ms. Oprah has this story. I know of women and some men who have this story. But you come out openly to talk about, and I know you have, you're peeling back the bandages of reconciliation. You're showing your scars, the scars of the sexual abuse, but you also triumph. You're a survivor. Would you like
well, for
to,
the record,
yes, sir.
It was actually twice that I was sexually abused, but I had just, you know, arrived to a point when I was at a level two institution. And, a level four. And I remember calling Mom one day and we was having a conversation and certain things came up from my childhood as far as my behavior. And out of nowhere, I just spit it out, you know, if you really want to know. And then I told, and at that time I had harbored it for like 19 years. And then on the visitation yard, Mom and my sister came up and I shared it with my sister in person. And then I later called my dad and conveyed it to him. But it was him that actually diagnosed me the first time. It was like, damn, that's why you acted out. And I, until then, I was like, you know, it was just something that I went through and I suppressed it. And now I'm bold enough to speak on it. But it was Dad. He was like,
yes,
that's why you acted out the way you did. And it dawned on me, like, it all made sense. But people individually, some things you can't do collectively. You know, people go to church, they go to mosques. They go and vote together. Some things you got to do as an individual. And once I arrived to that point where I said, you know what, I'm not responsible for that. That's not my shame to carry. I'd be damned if I continue to live a life as if I was a participant. I was a victim in that matter. And that was an individual decision that I made to voice it to my mom. And once I'd done that, it was like a world of pressure was like relieved from my shoulders. And I was actually able to stand up in like groups, the auditorium in prison and share my story. Because there were some times when opportunity presented itself and they wanted to hear from a new speaker. And amongst all those men, rapists, killers, dope boys, robbers, I was able to share my story. And and then I also wrote my book. The first book was Hijacked Childhood. And I remember allowing one inmate from Philadelphia, he was doing time here. And he read it. He said, you know, I had to stop reading your book and think. And I was like, why? He was like, my mom, man, she was a working girl. And she left me with her pimp one night. And he sexually abused me. So the story is common. It's common. I mean, it's a common story. But only a few of us arrive to a point where we're able to share our story, you know.
Okay. All right.
But
do you have any children, sir?
Yeah, I have two.
Do you have children?
Yeah.
You have two. Your father?
Two, yeah.
Wonderful. So you really went through a lot. But like I said, you found yourself and God has saved you, you know, and helped you go through a lot of things. Now, as a grown man, you wrote books. You have a wealth called Harry Cepho Jr. Wixsite.com. For people who like to know.
Correction.
Sir.
Sappho Media, they'll pull me up. Sappho Media, that's enough and they'll pull it up. But
Sappho,
yeah,
Media.
One.
Okay. I'm on the Wix site, sorry.
But
okay, I apologize.
One of the. Sounds like we're off, we're missing each other. Either I'm talking too early or are you complete. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, sir. I was just going to say, I was looking at the Wix site, website, and I was looking at the cover of your book, When Black Boys Are Left in the Dark, but you say you have another website also.
No, that's the one.
Yes, sir.
It's just when you pull up Sappho Media, that will come up, actually.
Okay. Yes, sir.
But
so,
the thing about that... black boys are left in the dark. The thing about that is, it's not a book that just conveys 10-year-old African-American male experiencing sexual abuse. I mean, it conveys the spiritual, somewhat roller coaster I was on, a lot of questions that I raised, for as, you know, the whole deity, you know, God concept. It even sheds light on how I was able to maneuver, you know, in an environment like prison. Because as I mentioned, I was 19 when I went in and 32 when I was released. So I had to have a lot of hate. People who like to exclude the word hate, they feel it's not necessary in this life. But sometimes hate is very necessary when you're in situations where you don't want to succumb to that environment, or you don't want to become complacent with it. So waking up in that environment, I hated it. I hated the conditions. I hated a lot of the everyday activity. I hated it. And that's what prevented me from becoming a part of it. And I hated it just that much. But, I did get a GED. I began to tutor, you know, other inmates as well as honing my craft as a writer. But it's like 7 books on Amazon. And one of those books is When Black Boys Are Left in the Dark. One of the newest books is called Black Owned. The setting takes place in Atlanta. And then there's a series called Black Girls and Family Orientated, which is written strictly for African-American women.
Okay. I agree with you. A predator can come in any race. It can. A predator can.
Right.
I agree with you. So, what I like to ask you, Reverend Gant, was it the Southern Christian Leadership Conference that found out about the birth control? Who did you bring? What state? Were they from Georgia, New York, Michigan?
No, it was actually a reporter. It was actually a reporter in New York, and I don't have her permission to put her name out or anything like that. But she actually, you know, connected the dots, and she suffered a lot of ridicule, you know, for bringing those things to the forefront. But we, you know, it puzzled me. It actually puzzled me that we had girls that were 13 coming up with the HIV virus, because, you know, that was, you know, I couldn't wrap that around my mind. But then when she brought up the fact that they were using birth control pills, you know, then it kind of, you know, made sense, because I don't think every 13-year-old girl is out here, you know, being what they call a thot, you know, out here sleeping with older men, because, I mean, you know, it just didn't seem right. Okay, and then when I look at the girls that were 27 years old coming up with this, with the HIV virus, you know, 13 to 27, well, these are the population that are mostly would be engaged in, you know, using birth control pills and things of that sort. So they're doing the research on that now, and we're gonna expose that, as you know, as more and more information come out. But going back to Harry Saffo, bruh, you see what you're hitting on is so near and dear to my heart, because most of the black men that are out here, no matter how macho they acting, no matter, they might be pastors, they may be leaders, they may be police officers, but I can guarantee you, if I line up 10 of them in a room, at least 7 of them have been through some type of sexual abuse in their upbringing, but they won't admit it because we're men, and we try to be macho, and we don't want to admit that, you know, that we engage in these, you know, and some of them might have not been abuse, but some of them might have been experimentation, you know, and that's another thing. So I want you to try to hit on that, Brother Saffo, with the experimentation of some of our young black males.
You know, influence is something else, and truth be told, I've been out in social gatherings, and I've had 20-something-year-olds, I wouldn't say 19, but early 20s, hit me, you know? And it took everything in me to deal with that, put my mind in that situation, you know, and not act out. But we live in a society where people are just free. They're open to anything. No research, no investigation. Just it sounds good. I heard it was good. I'm going to try it. But, you know, yeah, really. And I'm bold enough to say. But a lot of them is sometimes it's influence. Sometimes it's strictly because there was no male figure in that home. Some of these boys or men were raised by predominantly women. And certain behavior was encouraged or accepted. And some of them, you know, as you mentioned, it was, you know, I want to know what that lifestyle is like. And then you have those who play the fence, you know. They you know, you have a lot of bi guys out there. But I will say this, having experienced that and being in prison for 12 and a half years, you know, I'm an artist too. So there will be times when guys who, homosexuals that is, will want a Mother's Day card for their mother, or perhaps their sister was having an anniversary, wanted to get a card made, anniversary card made for the sister. And they would come to me for art. So I couldn't have any kind of complex about dealing with homosexuals. As of right now, I got a associate who is gay. And he's a hilarious dude to be around at times. But and people, even in that aspect, they don't understand that a straight guy can actually hang out. And I'm sure it'd be all kind of perhaps ridicule or disbelief. But it's possible that a straight guy and a bi or a homosexual guy can actually be mutual friendship. And it do away with that fear that just because I was victimized by two African-American males, I don't have to put all those men that are in the closet on trial. I don't have to hate every gay man I come in contact with. And having been in prison for those that amount of years, I mean, you see how these guys move. You know, if there's a guy, if he's gay about that life, he make it known on the visitation yard as well as in prison population. But then you're always going to have those guys who haven't come to grips with the fact that they are living a double lifestyle. That's where the danger comes in at. But when a person is like myself, I'm in tune with myself. Sometimes I've always been one to roll with the underdog. So even though it wasn't popular at some institutions where I was at, I deal with people the way they deal with me. And I was never pushed on in that aspect. And a level 4 yard is the hardest kind of time to do. That's the hardest time because it's like you in there with guys with various amounts of time, various crimes. And for a lot of people, they don't see no way out. But I stayed the course. You know, I had my way of getting my relief in that kind of environment, which I attribute to pornography, things of that nature. But overall, you do have men out here who are curious about that lifestyle and who are either living a double life or just curious about it, you know. But
okay. All right. Okay. Back to you, Reverend Gann. Then you can ask your question, sir.
I see it all. You know, when you look at the Word of God, I'm sorry to get religious on everybody, but I have to go back to the Word of God. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, it described, you know, what would happen to the children of God. And African Americans, we are the only one that fits that description in the world. And we have to look at the fact that a lot of the things that have happened to us, you know, are scripturally based. And now I see a great return. I see a great enlightenment. And this new generation of people that are coming out, they are researching. They are finding out the truth about things. And I see a great movement of enlightenment where black men are coming to terms with who they are. And I think that is a great step in the right direction for black America.
Yes, sir. So I just have a question for you. I have another question for you, Mr. Gant. Do you know why they're doing that when Atlanta and Georgia has a whole lot of black people, black Americans there? In Georgia, Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia, it's a whole lot of people. I think there's like 5 or 6 million people there in, not Springfield, but another place that I've been to Georgia before. Who's doing it? Is it a pharmaceutical company? Do you know? Can you come back on the show and talk about who's putting this, that HIV chemical in there? Because I believe you had said earlier, because I had to re-record this, that there were fifth in the nation for HIV new cases, and you're saying 13 to 27 years old, but all of them are not sexually active.
That's right.
So
that's
you believe
right.
that's about mm-hmm. about the age the mothers may be introducing their young girls to birth control is protection?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the reporter, how did the reporter find this out? And who's this, a certain pharmaceutical company? I mean.
Yeah, you know, Ms. Butler, you know, this is a war that we're in right now. And we are the target. We are the target. They're wiping us out. They're doing everything in their power to eliminate us. If you cut on your television right now, and you'll see a commercial that'll come on there, and that commercial is gonna have a black woman, mixed children, and a white male in that commercial. They are pushing out the propaganda right now as we speak, you know. And their whole objective is to eliminate the black male. And we are the only ones that are threatening them, because we are the children of the living God. And the DNA evidence has came up. They went back in Egypt and they went to the graves of the Hebrew Israelites that lived in Egypt. Well, you know, they were there for 430 some odd years. And they were enslaved in Egypt, and we know about Moses crossing the Red Sea and all that. So they went back to the grave. And they actually, you know, because we had the ability to do DNA tests, they did the DNA test. And guess who DNA matched that DNA? Black America. You know,
black
when
America.
I say black America, I'm talking about Jamaica, Haiti, Central America. I'm talking about all of those that was in the slave trade, that black diaspora during that time. And the Pope in the 1600s put out a decree that we should be captured and put in perpetual slavery, because they did not want our identity as the Hebrew Israelites, as the children of God, to be known to the world. But now, because of technology, now because of knowledge, now that has come to the forefront, that we are the children of the living God. Everything you see written in that Bible is about us. It's about our history. It's about who we
yes,
are.
Yes, I understand.
We are the
I understand that everybody in the Bible is black. I do get that. I understand why they would be black, because of the equator and the sun. There's no way white skin could survive in that type of climate with Africa and those other countries being that close to the equator. That they part, they burn. Their skin would just literally burn up.
Well, they whitewashed that, and now they want to.